Fevzi is our gadget detective, here to offer you free technological advice. But before we do that, Fevzi, ever embarrassed yourself?
I did, actually, and this isn't the one you're expecting because I've just thought of a better one. I once managed to get myself trapped in the loo of a fast food chain in Oxford Street, well-known fast food chain, and it was a loo that was kind of just one loo behind a door, so it wasn't like there were other people coming and going. I got myself trapped. The door mechanism, the lock, sort of broke off in my hand. I was trapped, and there was no one that was going to come in and save me until the next cleaning rota. So I thought, okay, no problem. I'll ring directory inquiries, get the number of the fast food chain, ring them up and ask them to rescue me.
Oh, you're so clever, Fevzi.
Well, I did that.
That's why you're the gadget detective.
Well, what I didn't realise was there were four of these particular fast food chains in Oxford Street in London. And they said, well, which one are you in? I've no idea the door numbers along there, you know. So I said, look, give me them all. I'll ring through them. So I had to ring through them and say, there is a possibility I'm trapped in your toilet, but I'm not quite sure. Could you just go and have a look, please? And I think on the third shot, we actually managed to get me free.
Oh, Fevzi, not good. I don't know, actually, the most embarrassing part of that story for me would be the fact that you were in a fast food restaurant.
This was a long time ago.
If you're going to get trapped in a toilet, make sure it's the Ritz or something, Fevzi.
Well, you see, then there would only have been one.
Yeah.
Four or five of them on one road.
Funnily enough, most of my embarrassing moments have involved technology and gadgets in some way. You know, so that the old chestnut, you forget the microphone's on. Do you know what I mean? And
loads
of people get to hear you discussing your love life. That's always slightly embarrassing when you walk into the newsroom the next day.
It's like when you put stuff on the internet, assume it's going to become public, be it an email or whatever. In the same way, if you're standing in front of a microphone or within earshot of one, assume it's switched
on. Don't discuss your sex life. It's a lesson I had to learn.
I will not be discussing your sex life again. I'm just so sorry. I won't be doing that.
Now, we are taking calls this afternoon, or rather you are, Fevzi, because I know nothing about gadgets. But you are able to answer most queries, aren't you, if they are technologically related?
I think so. We'll give it a fair shot, and if not, at least point people in the right direction.
Yeah.
Or sometimes, if it's particularly intricate, we can deal with it off air as well.
We've already got our first question, this from Ali in Shoreham. She does a lot of online shopping via her mobile phone, and her husband keeps on to her saying that she needs to get some security on it. Does she need to, even if it is an iPhone?
You know, this is interesting. My answers to this will vary depending on who you ask. I think yes, you do, because mobile phones, be they iPhones or otherwise, are now mobile computers that just happen to make phone calls and therefore should be protected in the same way. It is true to say there are fewer viruses and so forth that can infect mobile devices, be they iPhones or otherwise, but they do exist. And it's not just a question of, you know, if your device gets infected, it's also that people can trick you into revealing your details. So you may receive an email, you may click on a link thinking you're going to a particular website, but really you're going to a clone, an illegitimate clone of that website, and therefore you may be tricked into giving up your bank details and so forth. Equally, security software is useful for blocking all sorts of viruses as well. So I think yes, and it's interesting that most of the big antivirus manufacturers, you know, people like Norton and ESET and I've forgotten the other one I wanted to mention, but anyway, those two, they certainly produce now for mobile devices, and what you can buy now, which is quite good, is you can buy boxes that will cover all your devices. So let's say you've got a Windows PC, an Apple Mac laptop, an Android phone and an iPad. It will cover all of them because they've got a version of the software for all of them. So you buy it in a single box and it will cover almost all of your devices. So I think yes, it's a wise thing to do. There's no real downside to having it.
No,
I think
it's worth having.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, it looks like your husband was right, Ali, which I don't think was probably the answer she was looking for, Fevzi. But
I know, I'm sorry about that.
Thank you anyway.
She could have the T-shirt. Was it say, "I don't need Google. My husband knows everything."
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, we've helped deal with the domestic there, so I'm pleased. I feel we've done some good. Also, she has another question, and this involves speakers in her bathroom. Oh, posh. She's got speakers in her bathroom, and she wants to know if there's any kind of device that she can attach so that she can actually have kind of music or even the radio coming through.
Yeah, so there are two types of devices. You can either get devices which are sort of showerproof radios and so forth. I'm not sure what sort of speakers our listener has, but the best type of speakers to have in a bathroom are waterproof Bluetooth speakers, so that the device, you know, which is the source of the music, be it a radio or you know, music off your smartphone or tablet or what have you, can be beamed via Bluetooth from outside the bathroom. So in other words, it doesn't have to get all steamed up, and you can control it and listen to it that way. You can buy these devices, I mean, they're readily available for around you know, £50 or so, sometimes a bit less. If you want to continue, if your particular speakers don't have that Bluetooth facility, and a lot don't, then there are ways of doing it. You can plug in something, for example, I mean, you could either plug a device straight into it, but the problem with that is keeping it, you know, steam free. There are devices you can plug in. I mean, there's the Google Do one that allows you to stream audio over Wi-Fi, but again, the problem with it is trying to keep it dry. You could try and bag it up, but my best suggestion to you would be just to, you know, bite the bullet and buy one of these sort of already Bluetooth enabled devices that are designed for the shower. And you can get ones that will actually fit into a shower, and you know, the water can splash on them and they don't get harmed at all. And some of them sound pretty good. Also, there are ones that allow you to, because there's a Bluetooth link typically, say, to a mobile phone, you can actually answer your phone in the shower.
Oh gosh, really, there is no escape, is there, anymore? That is the thing. You can't even say, sorry, I couldn't get to the phone, I was in the shower, because now actually you could have taken that call. Yes. We're seeing more and more of this, not in the kind of gadgets coming into the bathroom. I was looking the other day, as I do, I'm not moving, but I just like to look at properties online, and I noticed a few of them featured TVs in the bathroom.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of that. And also, another popular thing is you get cases now that enable you to encase your tablet, be it iPad or otherwise, in a completely waterproof and buoyant case, so it can float in your bath. You pick it up, do a little bit of you know, tableting.
Gosh, I quite like the sound of that.
I know, it's kind of more flexible than the TV set. They do exist.
Take your tablet into the bath.
Yeah, you just make sure you get a good one. Obviously, you don't want to have suffer a leak on it or anything.
No,
like that
because... wouldn't be good. Spend some money on that, really.
Yes.
Yes. Now, your gadget of the week today is actually a music receiver.
It is. It's actually not completely disconnected to what we were talking about before, although I'm not recommended for the bathroom, this one. It's from a company called One For All, and One For All are the people who are probably best known for their remote control units, you know, so controlling many devices from a single remote. But this is a Bluetooth music receiver, but it's different from many others. So what it enables you to do is beam wirelessly music or other audio from your smartphone, your tablet, your laptop, or your Bluetooth enabled desktop computer, and it beams it across this little box, which is, a you know, about the size of a bar of soap, and then that can connect into, say, your home hi-fi that you've had for 30 years with really good speakers but no internet connectivity, or it could plug straight into your TV set or your surround sound system, whatever you've got, or in your kitchen.
So that's good. So it allows you to update your old hi-fi,
exactly.
Basically.
And the thing is, you know, modern kit is designed for having lots of stuff, like, oh, you can fit thousands of songs on this tiny little device, but the quality is often not great. And smartphones and tablets, because of their size, even the high-end ones tend to not have great speakers, and even if you're willing to plug headphones in, the converters in them are often at best average, partly because, you know, it's one of number of functions, you know, it's an all-in-one device, and also partly because all that electronics crammed together often means that you get sort of interference, so it's not unusual to hear a faint buzz or other noise on the headphone output of a smart device. With this, you beam it wirelessly using Bluetooth. Now, there are many devices that do this, but the reason I picked this one is it has three technologies that combined tend to give you excellent quality. One is the type of Bluetooth is called aptX, which broadcasters may know about because it's a codec that's used for ISDN lines. So in other words, it's a way of compressing data but still maintaining the quality. So it uses that technology. Secondly, the circuitry inside this device, it uses something called a Wolfson digital to analog converter. Now I know most people won't know what that means. What it means what it means is it's extremely high quality conversion of the sound into sound that you can hear, and it's this chip is more commonly found in much more expensive devices. So this is a £50 device.
Well, that is a good price, because I recently bought one of these speaker things, not this particular one, but I paid considerably more than that.
Yeah, well, bear in mind this doesn't have a speaker in it, this is the converter. So this is what you beam the Bluetooth, it right. receives the Bluetooth, and then you plug it into something with speakers, so it doesn't have its own speakers. But that's kind of the point, because this is a device that's about quality. So it's about using your, you know, your big speakers or, you know, or your TV set. And the other nice thing is it's got an optical digital output. So yes, you can connect it using, you know, a wired connection into your conventional hi-fi. But for example, a lot of TV sets have got optical inputs, and that's a way of getting the sound out perfectly without any loss of quality. So that's all great. Great quality device. The model number is the SV1820. It's one for all Bluetooth music receiver. And one more thing, it's got something called party mode, which means
like the sound of that.
So most Bluetooth devices, you can only sort of pair them with one phone at a time. And then if you want to use another phone or another device, you have to unpair it and repair it. So with this one, you can connect up to three devices simultaneously, hence the term party mode, because then you've got three people arguing about what music they played, I guess. But it's great, and it's energy efficient as well, A+ rating. So it gets 4 stars from me out of 5. It would have got 5, but it doesn't come with the optical output cable. So if you want to connect that way, you need to buy that. They're not expensive, but it would have been nice to have it in the box. But otherwise, 4 stars out of 5 still pretty
good. He doesn't
good.
Give those stars away easy either.
I don't.
If you have a question for Fevzi, our gadget detective, you can call the number 03 459 570057, or you can text 81333. Start your message with the word radio. The Birds now, Mr. Tambourine Man. Birds on BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey. We're joined by Fevzi, the gadget detective, taking your calls, answering your questions, free technological advice. You can give us a ring, 03459 570057, or you can text 81333. Start your message with the word radio. Something I wanted to ask you about, Fevzi, what's this I read about the NHS giving Google access to patient records?
Yeah, it was revealed. This wasn't told to us by the NHS, by the way. This was revealed by excellent piece of journalism from New Scientist magazine, and they came to understand that Google has been given access to an estimated 1.6 million NHS patients' records.
Is that allowed?
Yes, and what I've found out since then is that there's another 1,500 of these agreements in place with various third parties. So the NHS shares our data. And you remember a few years ago there was all this about, you know, did we want our records to be able to be shared across hospitals and so forth? And the idea was that, you know, if you were admitted to an A&E department, they could, wherever it was, they could instantly check your medical history and treat you appropriately. But we were given an opt-out for that. But unfortunately, with this one, people don't know it's happening. So the idea behind it, I don't want to paint this as being a completely bad thing. The idea is Google says it will use the data to develop an early warning system for patients at risk of developing something called acute kidney injury. So, you know, that's something that potentially is good for all of us and could be good for the individuals who are having their data shared. The way it's working is essentially, if you've attended at any point, any one of, in this case, three London hospitals, any time in the last 5 years, your data going back 5 years and continuing up until 2017 will then be shared with Google. Now, when the NHS Trust concern defended this, they said, well, it's no different to the other 1,500 agreements we've got like this. What? There's 1,500 other agreements like this. So
I think people would be really shocked to hear this.
To be honest, I consider myself to be quite savvy about, you know, information sharing matters, and I didn't know this. What I have found out, however, is that as with all information sharing agreements with non-NHS organisations, patients can opt out of any data sharing system by contacting their NHS Trust Data Protection Officer. Now, I'm sorry, I don't know who that is. But,
no, you know, and also, if you don't know it's happening, how can you opt out?
Well, I think it's, look, if it's something that concerns you and you do want to opt out, I think, you know, it is inconvenient, but you can ring your trust, NHS Trust, and ask for the details of the Data Protection Officer, and you can ask them, do I need to opt out on an individual basis, in which case I want a list of all the organisations that have had my data, or do I need to opt out generally? I think, you know, if you are concerned, you can opt out generally.
Or are we worrying unnecessarily? I guess the thing is, you know, we hear all the time about cyber attacks. I mean, again, this in the news, 2/3 of big UK businesses have been attacked in the past year alone.
Yeah.
And so you hear that and then you think, well, you know, you get to a point where you don't actually know who has your details, who has your information.
Yeah. And actually, in both cases, be it the NHS sharing or these cyber attacks, the key to it is transparency. So the NHS, for example, needs to be transparent about who it's sharing it with in advance of sharing it, so that you can make an informed choice. There may be an upside for you in sharing it. Now, with regard to these cyber attacks, as you say, 2/3 of this was a cyber security breaches survey, which is done annually, and they found that 2/3 of large businesses had been hit by attacks, cyber attacks, in the last year. A quarter of large firms experience a cyber attack at least once a month.
Gosh.
So this comes back to what we said at the beginning of this conversation, which is that you should assume that if your data is online, that at some point it will be leaked or made public. You know, just like be it an email or when you register with a website and you provide information. So there's just some general advice that I would give you, and this will stand you in good stead, whatever it is. Make sure, on the basis that websites will be hacked, make sure that you use a different password on every single account that you register, every website that you register. Think, do I need to register, or can I use the website as a guest, for example? If I need to register, do I need to give my real information? Now, if you're making a purchase or it's some sort of very serious thing, then obviously you need to give your real information. But sometimes you can, you know, change certain aspects of your personal information so that it's less useful should it be leaked. Now, that will
be telling us to lie, Fevzi?
It will be against the terms and service of the website, but not necessarily a criminal act. So I do it sometimes. Forgive me, sometimes I'm female, sometimes I'm older, sometimes I change it, and I change it in a way such that if that information is subsequently leaked, I can tell where it's come from.
Because
I will suffix, because I've got an unusual name, so it's easy for me to suffix my name with a few letters that will help me identify where I entered it. So, you know, you can do it as a little experiment, but have a separate password for each website that you register
is
on.
That
that's a key.
Realistic, though?
It is. Yeah, I'll tell you how. And this is now the lesser of two evils. There are things called password management software suites. So think software like LastPass, 1Password. These are vaults of all your passwords protected by a single password. Now, the benefit is once you've entered the single password, you can surf across the whole internet and it will just enter everything for you, and you don't need to remember them. It will generate for you unique passwords for each website, and passwords that are very hard for anyone to even key in, you know, 40 characters of the most god-awful combinations of characters that no one will ever remember to key in. So you rely upon the device. The downside of that is if they get your master password, then they can be in.
And but, they could get hacked, couldn't they?
Well, the way that LastPass works is very clever. They actually never store your data. You know, they don't store the data, so if they're hacked, they can't get to your data. If you are hacked, they could get to your password. So let's say someone manages to put onto your system something called a keystroke logger, which is a nasty piece of software that sits in the background. You don't know it's there, and it just makes a record. It's like someone with a notepad just writing down everything you key in on your keyboard and sending it off. Now, the answer to this is you combine two technologies. You get a password manager, such as LastPass, 1Password, there are many others, and then you use what's called second factor authentication. I'm sorry, I know that sounds scary. What it means is, in addition to a password being something that you know, you have a second layer of security, which is something that you own. So that could be, for example, you can get these little USB devices. They look like those little memory thumb drives, you know, for USB, but they're not. And that has to be plugged into a computer as well as entering your password. Or the second factor could be they send a code to your mobile phone, which you then key in. When you do that, then obviously it means that it's not enough for someone to have your password, which they would have if they hacked a website. They would also need access to your mobile phone to get the code, which in typical circumstances they won't have. The combination of a password manager and second factor authentication is probably now the most secure way of dealing with things, because what's the alternative? We log on to so many websites now. We either use, if we do it manually ourselves, and you know, we either write them down, which you're not supposed to do. I saw a company selling a book for entering all your usernames and passwords.
Brilliant. I love that.
So I'm not reviewing that. I won't give it a good review. But so you either do that. So people either use the same password or they use a variation of the same password. And believe me, the software that cracks these things is very good at working out what those variations are.
Mm.
And what happens is once one website gets hacked, the hackers have special software that then takes all those millions or thousands of usernames and passwords that they've stolen, and they apply them to every popular website under the sun, all the banking websites, all the home shopping web. So if you've used it anywhere else, they will find it, and they'll find it often within minutes.
Oh, scary.
So it's too late. And the other benefit is if you use password management software and then you have to change all your passwords for any reason because someone's been there. Well, first of all, you only need to change one password.
Yeah, that
and
makes
secondly,
life easier.
Because I've had to do it when I don't use this software, what I've had to do is, you know, after I've been, one of my websites has been hacked or one that I use has been hacked, I've had to go through and make a list of every site that I've ever used and try and remember it, and I'm sure I've forgotten some.
Yeah, that's 3 hours of your life you're never going to get back.
But it's a day. It took me a day to do it.
Don't. We are out of time, Fevzi, unfortunately. Very quickly, though, this password management software, how much it costs?
So with LastPass and 1Password, there are free versions, but for the full functionality, you then have to pay an annual amount. I forget the amount, but it's circa about £20-30, I think. I mean, yeah. It's not a huge amount of money. And the convenience of it is great, as I say, because once you enter the details, once you open up your vault, as it were, during that browsing session, all your passwords are automatically entered.
Mm, yeah,
fantastic.
No.
It's like speed dial for the internet, you know.
I'm going to look into it now, Fevzi, I promise. Now, people can follow you on Twitter and get free tech advice at Gadget Detective. They can also listen to the tech phone and at their convenience via the BBC's Let's Talk About Tech podcast. Fevzi, we'll chat again in a couple of weeks.
Great, thanks.